We'll start at 10:30.
You're live, Chair.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to ADA's Thursday, October 27, 2021, October board meeting. I'm sorry, is it Ramey?
Ramey,
okay. Ramey, I'd like you to call the board, the meeting order, and please call the board members for their presence, please.
Ms. Sandy.
Here.
Ms. McKinnon?
Here.
Mr. Kendi?
Here.
Mr. Fogel?
Here.
Commissioner Anderson?
Here.
Mr. Pruitt?
Here.
All are present.
Thank you. For us, for the board members of the agenda, I'd like to make one addition under new business, and I'd actually like to rename it A, first part of the business, and it would be election of vice chair. So we would put that before executive session. Is there an objection to off putting that into the agenda? And seeing none, that brings us to the full agenda. I get a motion for the agenda as amended.
I move the agenda as amended.
This is Albert. I'll second.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on the agenda? Any objection to adopting the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. That brings us to prior minutes for September 30th, 2021.
I move to approve the prior minutes for September 30th. 2021.
This is Albert. I'll second.
Thank you. So all members had an opportunity to read through the minutes. Any comments, corrections, clarifications that you'd like to offer? Is there any objection to adopting the minutes as presented? I don't see any objections, so the minutes are adopted as presented. Okay, it brings us to item number 5, public comments. I'll remind the public to please limit your comments to 2 minutes in person. We'd like to get your full name for the record and affiliation if you have one. I will start in the boardroom. Is anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment?
If there are any members on the line that would like to speak, I'm sorry, Chair.
All right. Is there anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment? All right. I don't see anybody. Now, if there's anybody online wishing to make a public comment, Ramey, would you give them the directions on how to do that?
Thank you. If there are any members on the line that wish to make a public comment, please press *9 on your phone now. Please clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Hoyer, Assistant to River Coalition. I just want to start by saying thank you so much for having a separate scheduled start time for both the AEA and ADA meetings. I know there's been a lot of comments about that in the past year, 2 years, and I really appreciate you guys listening and making those changes. I know myself and others really appreciate being able to schedule meetings on an actual starting our starting time. So just wanted to start with that. I also am calling in about the West New Sentinel Road resolution you guys are looking at today. I think ADA is premature in accepting the $8.5 million and think that the Alaskan money can be better spent elsewhere in Alaska. With that said, I am fully expecting you all to unanimously approve the resolution today. Before you do so, though, I hope that you can make some clarifications in the resolution that the Matthew Borough Assembly has not been presented a Phase 3 MOU, nor have they had the opportunity to vote on an ongoing MOU agreement. And I think after the mayor's strong opposition to the project this summer, I would not assume that they will go into this agreement and think that that should be clarified in your resolution on page 2. I also have some questions I'm hoping you can answer this morning when you get to the section of your agenda. In the input-output analysis, there is no mention of any negative impacts to the economy. There are a number of hunting and fishing guides as well as other tourism activities that occur in this area. Certainly people will be negatively impacted by an industrial thoroughfare coming through this area. And I hope that part of this $8.5 million that you're being given from the state will go towards looking at an independent cost-benefit analysis of this project before we get too tied into the weeds on spending on a project that might actually end up losing the borough and the state money. I'm also hoping, which you've been unable to address so far, who is responsible for paying for the maintenance and enforcement on this road, as that will certainly be an issue. And I know the borough has those questions as well, and I think that should be addressed sooner than later before, again, we build another road that the city can't afford to maintain. So thank you very much. I look forward to hearing those answers, and also just want to say thanks again for having a separate start time for these meetings.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Is there anybody else on the line that would like to make a comment? Please press star 9 on your phone now. Clearly state your name and affiliation if you have one. Chair, there are no further members on the public line.
Thank you. I will now close the public comment section of our agenda, and I will go to new business, election of vice chair for the Eater Board.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move that I nominate Board Member Julie Sandy to fill the role of Vice Chair for the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority.
This is Bill. I second.
Thank you. Any discussion? I will say that as in our previous meeting on the Energy Authority Board, I appreciate Ms. Sandy stepping up to the plate in leadership role for ADA, and I hope to have good things, contributions with her, and obviously represent Southeast to the fullest and maximum extent possible, which she already does. If there's no further comment, is there any objection for Board Member Sandy to become Vice Chair of the ADA Board? Hearing none, it passes. Welcome, Julie. In addition, I'd like to make the comment that Board Member Bill Kenday will now be joining the Budget and Audit Subcommittee member under Commissioner Fogle's leadership. There's lots of commissioners. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate your participation in the BAS committee. So that brings us to the original item A, executive session, which is looks like it's quite extensive on confidential matters related to our 2021 audited financial statements, the Mustangs Holdings divestiture, Alaska SMC LLC, Skagway Ore Terminal Loan Participation Terminal and Loan Participation Program Industry Sector Concentration and Risk Management. Just I missed a comment there after Skagway Ore Terminal. I have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Albert. I'd like to move that the board enter an executive session to discuss the confidential matters that you just discussed previously. This is supported by the Open Meetings Act, AS 44.62.310, which allows the board to consider confidential matters in executive session. In this case, the board believes that these are subjects which would have an adverse effect upon the finances of ADA or are protected by law due to the rules protecting personal privacy and certain business information.
This is Bill. I second.
Thank you. Is there any objection going to executive session? Hearing none, we will go into executive session. Thank you.
Perfect. You are live.
Thank you. Back to the ADA full meeting. It's 2:35, and I'd like to go on a new business. We're asked. I will say that the board did not take any formal action while we're in executive sessions about the subject matter that we went into executive session about. I do not see my cheat sheet here, so I'll say it that way.
So, Chairman, under item new business item 6C, we had originally scheduled a presentation coming from our auditors for ADA's financial statements. While those financial statements are substantially completed, there are a couple items that are still outstanding that we're looking at other, you know, either valuations or further clarification on. So we'll be looking to delay this now to the December 1st board meeting for presentation.
All right. Any objection to that? Hearing seen then. All right. We'll go then to go to the resolution G21-28 West Houston Access Road. Alan?
So, Chairman, Board, before you is resolution number G21-28. It's a resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority relating to the third phase of pre-development work on the Wissahickon Access Road. So attached and linked into the agenda was a is a resolution for the written resolution for this 21-28, as well as attached to it a board memorandum, which is reviewing the previous phases of development for the Wissahickon Access Road, as well as what is being proposed now for phase three, which is utilization of $8.5 million in unrestricted general fund allocations and infrastructure funding from the governor's legislation. What I did prior to discussion about this proposal, I wanted to address at least a couple items that were raised within the public comment that we heard this morning, in order to recognize some of the comments from Alice Hoyer. The economic impact study, which we do have attached to this memorandum, is something that ADA undertook internally, as a preliminary economic impact study based upon the mine development, resource development that's within the area of the Wissahickon Access Road. And I do want to recognize what Alice Hoyer highlighted about looking at a broader economic impact, which includes the negative impacts, ultimately, of the road development, and we'll be following up on that. The other element that I wanted to address was a question of responsibility for the maintenance of the road, and that gets to what we've been addressing since the start of the phased development proposals on the Wissahickon Access Road. We've been approaching this as a public-private partnership engaged with the resource owners, developers, ultimately, and users of the road itself. The maintenance, and we have identified this previously, the maintenance of the road would be within the usage fees that are being charged to those users for the road and ongoing maintenance of that as a typical P3 development. So again, it's a public-private partnership working with private resource owners who would be paying usage fees for the utilization of the resource road. It is, in case, a combination of a public portion of the road and a private portion of the road. That's what's being further defined, ultimately, with the Matthew Borough and the resource owners themselves as we go on for development. But that in itself, the portions of it that are available to the public, portions that are being defined for private utilization, is what needs to be further defined.
So is the $8.5 million assigned to the whole road or just a portion of the road?
Right now, the development, the allocation of funding that's coming from UGF is for permitting activities for the entire road development. So early phase development, again, from phase one to phase two, we've been focusing on a route delineation that goes from Port McKenzie to the Edna Mining District. The permitting that would be in place needs to be finalized ultimately for this in completion of this third phase, which is the full permitting NEPA application for the road development, is for the entire route selection. It would cover the entire route.
$8.5 million
cover all that? The portion of it, the $8.5 million at this point in time, we believe will be allocated to a portion, a amount of about $2.5 million, possibly $3 million, that would be allocated ultimately for the pre-permitting activities to get to the NEPA application. The remaining amount would be dedicated to supporting the economic impact assessment that would need to be undertaken by the federal agency reviewing that application. Based upon previous experience with the Amber Access Project, it is likely to fully cover that amount, but it's not guaranteed that it fully covers those amounts. That really is determined ultimately on the federal agency and the terms of the EIA or the full assessment they undertake.
All right, so if it doesn't cover the full amount, then what happens?
The same situation, Chairman, that we were in with the Amber Access Project, where we're discussing that with the legislature about additional funding to complete that.
All right, so there's no budget yet? Is there a budget?
The budget at this point in time has been defined for in the $2.5 to $3 million ultimately for the permitting activities that would need to be taken to complete or get us to a point of a NEPA application. Now that's ultimately subject to a procurement process and finalizing of that full budget that's in place for that part of it. The remainder of $8.5 million would be dedicated to supporting the EIA undertaken by the federal agency.
So the route has been selected.
The main route has been identified, again, from the Edna Mining District ultimately to Port McKenzie, but there is alternative routes that need to be proposed ultimately in the application.
Okay.
That to review where we're at in process and how we're going forward with Phase 3, what I would like to ask is Justin Peterson, who's our project manager on West Ascent Access Road, if he'd join us up here to describe a bit of the process.
Mr. Chairman, we had one public comment this morning that was pretty generous to us, and I think maybe to answer some of their questions would be, the support from the Mat-Su Borough and the Mat-Su Mayor, and I believe there's an election that happened this week. No? Okay. And then if you could talk about the enforcement and maintenance of that road as well for Jesse during his presentation.
Through the chair, Board Member Fogle, the public commenter you mentioned is Alice Foyer, and that's what I just identified as far as where the maintenance is being covered on the road itself. There's a particular concern, I believe, within the community that it's another road development that would be left up to the borough itself to maintain. On road development, that's not the intention of this development. We're approaching it, again, the same way that we've been approaching development of the other access roads that we've been involved in on a private basis. In this case, as the chair has identified, there are public access components of this roadway that need to be taken into place, but the maintenance and ongoing maintenance of the road itself is intended to be wrapped into the underlying private arrangements for use of the road. That gets down to the delineation of what is private access, for private, the resource users, and what is the public access that needs to be further defined on how the road in itself is delineated that way.
What about the support from the Mat-Su Borough Assembly and the Mayor's Office?
That's one thing that we can highlight on the timetable is that ultimately with Phase 3 that we want to go through with the board, and we have detail of that within the memorandum.
So right now we are this resolution in front of us is accepting the $8.5 million from the legislature.
That is what we are requesting the board's approval for.
Okay. Yes. If we don't accept it, what happens?
I believe in this case the funding would not be allocated to us and would return to the UGF.
Okay. So it's completely in this board's privy to decide whether or not we take $8.5 million.
That is correct, Chairman.
I'm just playing devil's advocate. Do you think we should, and I look forward to your answer, do you think we should hold off on accepting money until we have clarity from the overlying public public organization, i.e. the borough?
Chairman, in my opinion, no. That's why we propose the resolution at this stage, is because the legislature has defined ADA as the agency to receive these funds for the development of the West Ascent Access Road.
Again, we can't do anything without the entity. Government entity that oversees it, their buy-in. So the Mat-Su Borough has that buy-in in order for us to promote a project in that public area. That's in our statute, right?
That is in our statute. That's 4488-177.
So if we accept the $8.5 million and the borough says we don't have buy-in, i.e. they vote, we would have to have a resolution from them before we spend any money?
Before we allocate the funding on the project itself. Now, if I may, Chairman, explain.
How about allocate, how about the dollars that you spend in between now and the borough making a decision whether or not to support the project? Does that come out of $8.5 million?
If we were utilizing those funds, that would be coming out of $8.5 million. We do not have a separate budget that's been allocated for the Washington Access Road at this time.
So everything that you're going to spend on it, people's time, consultants' time, regardless of what the borough does up until the borough decides, will come out of that money, not our general fund.
Theoretically, and that's what I wanted to clarify, is that with the timetable that we have in place that's defined within the memorandum, we're undertaking a process of publicly procuring an external advisor to complete that pre-development permitting activity. So we need to go through that process. Ultimately, time-wise, we need to initiate that to expeditiously as possible pursue the permitting activities as the legislature has requested us to do. And in that meantime, there is the time period to actually approach the assembly, which has been defined with the Massachusetts Borough for December.
In December?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And the other last question I have is, there has been a lot of comments, input from the public, both sides, on the Ambler Road for both public access and private access on the industrial road. This road, is your interpretation, is it an industrial road? If the public's going to be on it or a portion of it, then you have to build to what I would call federal highway standards, which is then brings DOT in the middle of it, which then brings public safety in it. You can't put the public on any road without having minimal design requirements and then obviously enforcement and maintenance to community standards. And I think that needs to be addressed. I think that needs to be sooner than later, because there's going to be confusion when you talk about a portion of it or some of it being access to the public. Well, what part are you thinking, or what part is the group thinking? And, again, we've heard a lot of public testimony on public access on the industrial road on Amber. This is in the heart of South Central Alaska. So I guess, have you thought about that under phase one or phase two? Has there been talk about where that would be? And if someone asked the question to me, what portion do you think would be public? What portion do you think would be non-public? Is it a DOT design type road? Part of it? All of it? Maintenance? Does it? So I'll let you answer that.
Okay. Chairman, again, Sound Weiser, what I think you're highlighting is important to define between Ambler Access Project and the Washington Access Road Project, the way that we have been discussing it at the ADA level and the way that permitting was put in place ultimately for the Ambler Access Project. One of the key elements that's within the record of the decision that we were able to achieve on the Ambler Access Project is that they're defining that the actual road design itself does not support public access. And it's specifically highlighting that it's been focused on industrial only and can only be really used for industrial only purposes because of the design of the road itself and the permitting attached with it. So it's a very valid point that you're highlighting, is that at this particular stage, we, because of the desire to have public access for portions of the road that does need to be defined, on how that access is going to be arranged, that is part of the key design element that needs to be put in place for this permitting, ultimately for our NEPA application, the way that the route itself and the dynamics of that get to define. But a lot of those specifics also come into play with the application and interaction with the federal agency.
So to follow that up, the decision of what's going to be public access and what's going to be private access is not ADA's determination, but it is a determination between the borough and the commercial users. And we are facilitating that end result, if there is one.
Chairman, I would say we're looking to implement the road and the access for the road that the borough itself is defining for that access. And it makes them a key partner in the process.
We're not defining what's public and what's private. We are working with entities that will come to some conclusion that ultimately is what's public and private. And then ultimately it becomes a question of the cost.
And the design elements to it. And what ultimately funding contributions as well that come into play with that based upon those decisions. Okay. Jesse, can you go through a bit of a summary on phase three, how we're proposing it?
Yeah, you bet. So phase three, what we're calling phase three, that builds upon the work that we have done previously with the route selection and the preliminary engineering. So we still have a little bit of work to do in order for us to get ready to submit a permit application. So there's a small amount of field work that we're anticipating is going to have to be accomplished. We're going to have to do some baseline studies of fish and hydraulics and cultural and historical resources. And so we've got a little bit more work to do in order to put us in position to submit a permit to the regulatory agencies. And once we do that, that triggers the environmental impact statement process through the NEPA, and that'll be a separate component of this work. That'll be a separate procurement. That'll be a separate contractor to go through that process. And like Alan highlighted, we're going to publicly procure and competitively select a contractor for this next phase to assist us with submission to the Corps.
How long is the road?
Just over 100 miles.
So is it fair to say that if it costs $75 million for engineering for 200 miles, that it would cost half of that to do 100 miles?
I don't believe it's exactly half to answer the question, Chairman. This being Sam Weissner, I believe that there's a significant component of that which would be undertaken to do the final feasibility development of the road itself. Because there's certain dynamics that are different in the West Ascension Access Road that are different from Amber Access, which is your comparison.
Okay. I'm just trying to get an idea what the economic, in order to get a decision to build a road, which the private entities are ultimately going to pay for, sounds like.
Predominantly, yes.
It's someone's going to have to come up with the funds to get to that decision. So it would be, will they come if who's going to spend the money to get to the point where they decide whether or not they can afford it? We've got $8.5 million in the kitty, right? If I was the Matthew Burr Assembly, I would want to know what the economic big impact is and where those dollars are coming from in order to make that decision. So that's why I asked. So I think that's really important, Jesse, that we kind of get an idea. I mean, I would ask you that question if you were coming in front of me. Okay, $8.5 million, is that 50%, 100% of the cost before the resource developers on the other end of the road, the mining district makes a financial investment decision or not?
The budget, the chairman's budget is at this point in time focused on completing permitting to get to a record of decision. What I would highlight is that for the Amber Access. What's that?
Similar to Amber.
Amber would cost the cost of the EIS was $5.2 million. Now, there was some preliminary costs that were obviously incurred, ultimately preparing to get it to that submission. Now, that's one thing that we've approached very differently on with West Ascension Access Road. And what we're highlighting is that at this stage, to go forward to get it to a point of having the NEPA application in place, we're anticipating $2.5-3 million out of that budget.
Yes, that's correct. And really, it's important to highlight that this just gets us to potentially a record of decision, and then after that, post-record of decision, then we'd have to advance the engineering to a stage where we could get it shovel ready. And so, I mean, we're really at, you know, we've got a typical defined, typical section defined. We've got a rough order of magnitude on the quantities that are out there. And we've identified the stream crossings and the number of bridges and the number of culverts. And so we kind of have a rough idea on what the cost would be. But really the design's at a very preliminary stage. But we still have to go through a certain amount of engineering refinement in order for us to put together a comprehensive submission to the Corps.
Well, we spent $27 million in order to get to the record decision on handbook. $27.5 million in Slope County, right? And now budget is another $70 million to do the pre-engineering development, of which time the producers in the district will make a financial investment decision whether or not that it makes economic sense to open the mine. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page here. That one, we got $8.5 million that we're asked to start with. It doesn't sound like it's enough to get to the record of decisions, hey, if I was just a guess. And then there's going to be another tranche after that in order to understand what it would actually cost, as you said, you know, with a typical section, quantities, type of bridges, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in order for a commercial operator to decide whether or not they can pay for it. As you indicated, Alan, that they would be paying for the road. I assume there would be a revenue, some type of revenue bond or some type of financing put in place. And I just want to make sure that accepting the $8.5 million doesn't obligate ADA to pay the balance to get to the record decision. Two, that we have borough buy-in before we start spending $8.5 million. And three, that the public's fully aware of what's anticipated, what kind of road it is, where everybody's thinking and whatnot, as far as the access issue, because it was a big issue. You know, if you go to the rural areas on that Ambler Access Road, you didn't want any access. You go to the urban area, Fairbanks, they all wanted access. So it's really important that we've been there and done that. We identify that. That's what I really want to understand.
So, you know. Chairman, what I'll define again is that based upon our direct experience on an, as you highlighted, which has been a complicated but an extended process with the BLM on Ambler Access Project, the record of decision itself was $5.2 million. And taking into account what we know is the case on the pre-development work that we've done in West of Sedna, with the work that was remaining, we do believe, and that's why we propose it to the legislature and have it allocated to us, that we do believe that that is sufficient to support, ultimately, to get a record of the decision. It doesn't guarantee, because we can't control the costs, ultimately, that are within it. That's really determined by what that federal agency is that gets engaged. But it does mean that there is a decision that we will be coming back with following that, of looking to do the same thing where with Ambler setting that model, the Red Dog development setting that model where it's an engagement directly with private capital, private investors. And in this case, we're really looking to bring in the borough itself as our partner and have done from the very start on deciding at that point in time with the record decision, is there the right way going forward, where that funding will come from, the same process that we undertook with Ambler Access.
So there was a comment made in the public comments. Maybe Bill, you can answer this, Carolyn, about how the mayor and the assembly didn't support this project. Is that accurate?
When Alan and I were there 2 years ago, Alan?
It's about a year and a half.
A year and a half. It was the assembly supported our, was that phase one or phase two?
That was phase two. The last time we had the
six to one.
Okay. So that was an accurate statement.
No, it is. The call was accurate from the standpoint that the mayor, who's not a voting party on the assembly, did voice, he raised issues of other infrastructure that needed to be completed within the borough, that he was applying that to ADA. Now, ADA was never involved in the development of Port McKenzie itself. We weren't involved in the Kinnick Arm Bridge development. We weren't involved in the ferry that the Vanessa Borough had undertaken. So it was in the comment of ultimately looking at other ways that we could benefit the Vanessa Borough, he was tying us in to things that hadn't been completed. And it's unfortunate because Ada was never involved in those, and there were some conclusions that, oh, well, Ada picked that up and they didn't complete these other projects. It's incorrect. It was a wrong illusion. Ultimately, he was trying to get...
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure, because that was stated. I want to get on our record that what happened out there. Okay. Thank you.
Is the entire 100 miles, is it solely on state land or private land? State and borough. No native organizations whatsoever.
No, as currently plans, the current route does not cross any native corporation lands at all.
Okay. What about tribal land?
That would have to warrant further research on that.
Yeah, you might just want to.
This is Julie. There really isn't much tribal land out there. It's mostly village corp and regional corp.
Okay.
How about allotments?
Could be some allotments out there.
We need to check into that now and not later.
You're dealing with individual, not the tribe.
Yeah, that'll be identified in this next phase.
But essentially what we're looking at with the earlier determinations, delineations, and the work that we've been involved in this case our external contractor was HDR, who was working with us on phase one and phase two, is a route delineation which is predominantly state and borough land. I don't believe in my review of it, understanding of it, that there were any private allotments, actually.
That's correct.
Okay, and the last thing I just want to make. We're facilitating a request by the legislature and the Matsu Borough, and we don't have a dog in this fight. We're just facilitating a program, an access road, that the legislature has deemed appropriate, and hopefully the Matsu Borough, and we're facilitating it. We're not proponents of it. I want to make sure that Ada is not in the position out there that we're fighting for a project that, because I can see that there's going to be the yeses and the noes in the borough, we're here to facilitate it. Correct?
Yeah. Chairman, our role is to develop the infrastructure. The governor has proposed the legislation which the legislature approved and allocated the funding. Finalizes permitting under the basis and expertise that we have in defining access facilities in the state of Alaska and to raise engagements and partnerships with private capital.
And hopefully get the project to the finish line.
Yes.
Right. Okay. But when it comes to, I guess, the tug of war, you can refer that to the parties that are sponsoring this. Okay. All right. Further questions? Any more, Alan? All right, I'll take a motion for the resolution on the floor.
I move resolution number G21-28, resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority relating to the third phase of pre-development work on the West Mississippi Access Road Project.
Thank you.
Board Member Sandy, a second.
Thank you. Further discussion? Amy, would you pull the board, please?
Ms. Sandy?
Yes.
Ms. McKinnon?
Yes.
Mr. Kendig?
Yes.
Mr. Fogel?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion has passed.
Thank you. That brings us up to item number D, Gateway Water Terminal Evaluation Report. And by the way, I asked, for the boards, I asked these questions to get stuff on the record. It was important that we build a record for something that's going to be is a 100-mile road in the Massey Valley. So I would encourage other
I would encourage staff and other board members as this comes up that we build a record as to what our intentions are and why we think it's appropriate.
Sir, the chairman.
So, Skagway Orchard Mall, Alan.
Chairman, board members, this is an update to resolution number G2105, in which you allowed ADA to undertake an evaluation assessment of the Skagway Ore Terminal. This is one of those elements, Chairman, following on your comments, that I think it's important that we also establish for the record, which is how ADA, before discussing the evaluation, how ADA got involved ultimately in the Skagway Ore Terminal and what it is as an asset currently on our balance sheet, and defining out what our role has particularly been within the Skagway community for that the ore terminal. So
the ore terminal is actually an ore transfer facility that's on a port or a dock. We don't own the dock. We own the dock.
We do not own the dock, and that's what I'll get into that detailed information on. That really clarifies, for the record, exactly what our position is on that.
And what this terminal really does, so for the public to know what it actually does in Skagway.
Yep, certainly. So ADA currently owns the terminal. However, we are not the original owner or developer of the facility. ADA has never been the operator of the Skagway Ore Terminal and only owns the above ground terminal assets. It subleases the land in an agreement with White Pass Yukon Railroad, which I'll refer to as White Pass generally, that expires on March 16, 2023. And we get into detail on that within the board memorandum. So we do not sublease the associated ore dock or the port basin area under the ore dock. Those are leases that are held directly by White Pass and their subsidiaries that we sublease the land from. That ultimately is controlled by White Pass, which is under direct lease with the municipality of Skagway. Shipments of lead and zinc ore and concentrates have come out of the Yukon territory to Skagway, mostly by rail, since 1900, and decades before ADA's ownership in the facility. In 1968, White Pass entered into a 55-year lease with the municipality of Skagway and built the original ore storage terminal building and ship loader, which was originally an open conveyor system in the Skagway Harbor. So from 1968 to 1986, White Pass transported lead and zinc ore and concentrates from the Faro mine in the Yukon Territory to the facility and loaded the ore and concentrates onto cargo vessels using that open conveyor system. In 1986, an entity called Bowhead Equipment Company began operating the terminal and loading ore onto ships from the facility. And at that point, effectively 50,000 tons of low-grade zinc and lead ore concentrate was being passed through the terminal each month. The industrial transportation practices that began in the late 19th century and continued through the 1980s, and this is mostly open trucks, the open conveyor system, just the process that was undertaken in the earlier operations by White Pass and terminal, that resulted in documented environmental contamination within the municipality of Skagway and the port basin. So that's what we reference as staff and in our communications as legacy contamination, really resulting from those prior transportation processes and systems. So during the inspection by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service around 1983, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation became aware of the lead and zinc contamination in the railroad right-of-way, at the ore loading facility, and at other upland areas within the Skagway Harbor. So in 1988, the EPA issued a compliance order to Bowhead Equipment Company to immediately cease the discharge of ore into the waters of the Skagway Harbor, and that ultimately led to compliance orders that were issued by ADEC to White Pass in 1988 and 1999, for the remediation of the entire waste, the Skagway Harbor, the ore terminal facility itself, and then the railroad areas within Skagway. And that, in this case, is the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, ADEC. They then enter into at that time, White Pass entered into a long-term material release and tracking prevention program with the state. All that information is available on
the Department of Environmental Conservation site under the Skagway, municipality of Skagway listing. There's also very specific numbers on compliance orders that if everyone is interested on those, we can lead them in the right direction to find those on DEC's website. So it was at that point in time, after those compliance orders were signed by White Pass, that ADA was brought into the ore terminal. And part of the remediation plan that they entered into was a relocation or sale of the ore terminal at that time to a responsibly focused private party. But as you can imagine, with the issues of contamination are outstanding, the orders that were in place, there's not many private parties that would step into that issue directly, as well as the fact that the municipality of Skagway was requesting the continued operation of an ore facility within their community because of the economic development aspects of that ore terminal. So that is where ADA came involved. And we, in 1990, Alaska's 16th legislature basically determined and appropriated $25 million that was directed to ADA to acquire the Skagway ore terminal. This was also supported by Governor Calvers at that time. So we ultimately ended up acquiring the facility, and this was, again, at the request of the municipality of Skagway, and that's represented through their resolution, which is number 90-17R, in which they're requesting that ADA comes in and acquires that and continues the economic development benefits of the ore terminal for the community. And this is really maintaining the jobs and the other economic development aspects of having our terminal in place. We completed the purchase, and we took the sublease at that point in time in July of 1990, and we subsequently invested in the capital improvements in the facility itself. We enclosed the previously open conveyor ship loader, as well as creating a negative air pressure system within the terminal building itself, which was, again, to address the issue of fugitive dust, which created the contamination, previous contamination, the legacy contamination. Many of the mines that were associated with the terminal were closed in the Yukon Territory, which forced full-time use of the terminal to come to a halt in 1992, shortly after we had purchased the facility. From 1992 to its last shipment and closure in 1998, the terminal was used on a very intermittent basis. In 2007, the terminal was undertaken improvements which are currently in place at the facility now. Its current footprint were put in place, and they were made ultimately to reopen it under an agreement with Capstone Mining, which is a Canadian mining company. They had acquired the Minto mine, which is a copper concentrate mine. Following that utilization or redevelopment of the facility, the ongoing use of the terminal facilities was solely for the Minto mine and, again, shipment of copper concentrate. The facility itself has been under those arrangements through the end of the lease, the sublease that we have with White Pass. So that ends as well on March 16, 2023. The most recent environmental report that's been engaged by White Pass as the Port Basin Lease Order holder is the Skagway Ore Basin Risk Assessment Report, which we commonly refer to as the Golder Associates Report, and that is dated January 2018. Within that report, what I would highlight is that it's been confirmed that again, this is a quote from the report, the majority of the calculated hazard index is from lead and zinc. That's what we refer to as legacy contamination. They go on to highlight that copper, chromium, and silver do not appear to contribute significantly to the hazard index. So our ownership, the utilization of the ship of the ore terminal facility under its operator, which is Mineral Services, not ADA, is under that environmental report not the contributor to what is the legacy contamination within the harbor itself. It goes back to the prior use of lead and zinc, again, historical utilization of the terminal. So this report was approved by Department of Environmental Conservation in August of 2018. As it currently stands, White Pass has been working with the municipality of Skagway
on a port basin remedial approach work plan. Department of Environmental Conservation has approved the updated remedial action options analysis, which was also prepared by LifePath in October of 2019. So the Department of Environmental Conservation has stated that its support of the general approach and selected remedial option, which is outlined in those reports, which is ultimately dredging of approximately 85% of the mass of accessible contamination. This is defining the fact that there is levels of contamination that are within and covered by sediment that are being suggested to not be dredged up and not be addressed, because that would create a bigger problem within the harbor itself. So in short, what I would like to conclude just in defining this for the record of how we came into play with this facility is that ADA was brought in to provide environmentally responsible oversight to the Skagway Ore Terminal, and through ADA's involvement, the Skagway Ore Terminal was revitalized into a cleaner, safer, and economically productive facility. We have been seeking a way of a path forward with the municipality of Skagway of an ore terminal operation within the harbor basin itself. However, as our memorandum identifies in its conclusion section, it's become clear to us through comments and statements made by very recently by the mayor at the Southeast Conference that there is no desire of the municipality to continue or extend the current leases that we have for the ore terminal itself, that there's very limited economic viability going forward for the operation of the ore terminal, and our recommendation and conclusion ultimately from that assessment is that we should let the ore terminal lease expire as currently in place, March 16, 2023. In saying that, I do want to identify, and I ask Jesse Peterson as the project manager for the facility to also give the board a summary of the evaluation report that was undertaken with Jesse's involvement with ASRC as our contractor.
Thanks, Alan. So the evaluation that we undertook this past year was a boots-on-the-ground evaluation of the infrastructure that ADA owns. And so we went and we looked at the ore loader and the platform. We looked at the concentrate storage shed. We looked at all the ancillary infrastructure that is a part of that terminal. I really wanted to get an understanding of, okay, if there was a reinvestment, what would it look like? How much effort would it take? What would the capital improvement program look like? And so we went through and we first identified the current capacity of the concentrate storage shed in the ore terminal there, and then identified, you know, what are some of the potential mines that could come online and what would that additional throughput look like, and what would the tonnage across the belt be, and could that help justify a reinvestment into the ore terminal? And so we stepped through that process, we got a very detailed report that ESRC and their subcontractor, Moffitt and Nichols, put together. And we looked at what would be the best type of ore loader to use going forward. We looked at the current capacity. We looked at future mines coming online. We looked at expanding the storage shed. And ultimately came up with a number, and a capital cost is what we came up with. And we backed in and took a look at what mines are coming online in the next couple of years. And with all the factors in play and with the fact that the number of days that ore ships have been able to dock at that current facility is dwindling, with the increase of the cruise ship passengers, the amount of investment required isn't justified from our perspective.
And Mr. Chairman, board members, the range, right, of the reinvestment requirement ultimately to update facility, to modernize the facility, again, given the initial investment in that by White Pass in 1968, and the upgrades that we put in place in 1992 and ultimately 2007,
that upgrading that would mean an investment, a new investment of between $25 million to $54 million based upon the initial feedback coming from ASRC.
Sure.
Now, that there could be modifications clearly to that. There could be upgrades of a portion. There could be minimizing the footprint ultimately. It doesn't have to be 750,000 ton capacity. However, what we looked at principally in coming to our conclusion is the community's view of the ore terminal itself. They're very focused, the community as a whole, is our assessment, is very focused on their cruise ship activity. The availability of ship activity for unloading of any ore concentrate, utilization of the terminal, wherever it may be located, is always going to be limited ultimately by and have a priority to cruise ship traffic at that time, which is limiting in and of itself. And there's information that's within the evaluation report which identifies the increasingly limited number of days that the existing facility currently has access to unloading for any future user of the ore terminal. And then ultimately looking at the stage where mining activity that would need this facility, their readiness to enter into a commitment with us at this point in time to support that type of investment is also very limited. So the economic feasibility ongoing does not look preferential to this type of investment. And we don't see the capacity to have a much lower investment because of the requirements of the local community ultimately to meet what they're needing ultimately for this type of industrial activity, transshipment activity, to continue within the harbor.
This is Board Member Sandy. So, Alan, just so I'm clear, was it the municipality that of Skagway that originally requested that ADA become involved?
That is very true, because that is the initial resolution that approved us ultimately coming in and acquiring the ore storage facility from Skagway, from White Pass, the operators at that time, to ultimately bring in a responsible party because of the contamination and remediation that was being undertaken and required within the community.
And so, just so I'm clear, so at the time, ADA's involvement was related to bringing stability to Skagway for what was then a year-round industry. ADA spent roughly $32 million as an investment to help do that at the request of the community or the municipality. From the information that you presented today, it doesn't sound like there's still that same need, that the ore terminal, either from the municipality or the community, is no longer in support of the ore terminal?
For the chair, Board Member Sandy, what I would say is that we have attempted to engage with the Skagway Assembly and the mayor and manager on what that future opportunity, that ongoing basis would be for the ore terminal. The discussions have not been extensive. Following on having roundtables for early conversations about how we can go forward under memorandums of understanding, what the requirements would be, ultimately there really does not look to be a path forward that is supported by the Assembly.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
it really is open to questions from the board on how we reached our conclusions, if you want further background on that or further background within the report.
Go ahead.
Sorry, just one final follow-up question for Jesse. This is Board Member Sandy. That $25 million to $54 million, that's kind of a big swing. Jesse, do you mind? I understand the report is attached, but for the public, is it possible for you to just give us a brief summary on what that swing would include? That's a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely, Julie. So that swing right there is based on rough order of magnitude cost estimating, really kind of that high level, 50,000 foot level views. And so there's standards that are widely adopted when you're doing these types of estimates. And so we've used that, and that's what's given us kind of that range right there. But it's important to highlight that that's for an entire facility upgrade. And as Ellen had mentioned before, there's different ways that you can scale that back appropriately. You know, if you just wanted to replace the ore loader with a new, more modern ore loader, that's, you know, significantly less. And one of the challenges with the facility right now is it's only set up for one user. And so that's one mine, you know, and to really be an effective port, an effective export facility, it needs to be open to multiple users so that we can have multiple opportunities to export ore through that terminal. And so there's some challenges there that we addressed in the report, but you wouldn't have to do that full scale of development.
And,
okay, thank you.
And through the chair, Board Member Sandy, just to add a little bit to that as well, is that all of the activity that has been through the ore terminal is related to transshipments and the relationship that Skagway has with the Yukon Territory. They're the deep water port most adjacent to Whitehorse and connections ultimately into the territory, as well as some mining development in British Columbia. So they have an interest in that capacity. If there's a future ultimately for some development or some other restructuring the size of that, they're a key party to that in really helping to define what can be done on the basis of commitment for that capacity. We are not proposing, nor do we look to make any type of presentation to the board based upon a speculative restructuring or redevelopment of the facility itself. I'm saying that also from the standpoint that there's another speculative element that's attached with this, which is related to the municipality's view on the Skagway Harbor and redevelopment of the harbor itself. They've engaged professional services of the contractors that are looking at how that facility can be restructured for enhancing the cruise ship access, and also relocating some portions of industrial activity within the harbor. We can't address an assessment with the SRC on what that may be because it's right now it hasn't been defined, hasn't been concluded, and it's unclear how financially that will be undertaken by Skagway in redeveloping different industrial components of it. So we've only addressed this report based upon what the current facilities are, what we know access is, what we know what the current footprint is, what the current lease elements are. There's too many unknown factors to really address with a external consultant. So we directed it purely on what we know at this point in time.
Mr. Chairman, I guess Alan or Jesse, at the end of the lease term in 2023, what is our obligation to the municipality of Skagway or to that ore facility?
Well, the way that the lease terms work at this point in time, how they were entered into originally when ADA became involved and was subleased, is that our lease expires on March 16th, 2023. The facility is then handed over to White Pass. White Pass's underlying lease, which is through an entity called Parn, with the municipality, ends on March 19th. And it's really subject to the terms of those underlying leases.
Okay. And then, we don't want to leave Skagway high and dry. We're always there to help them with any redevelopment that they may want to do for that or terminal facility, turn it into a cruise dock or anything. But we're there. That's what we do. We've done at Icy Strait Point. We've helped facilitate docks there, so I imagine we can do the same thing for Skagway as well, correct?
Through the chair, Board Member Fogle,
there's nothing in the process going forward with the Skagway or terminal that would stop working directly with the municipality of Skagway and whatever their development plans are, or with White Pass and whatever their development plans may be for the harbor, as the two major participants really on that cruise ship activity and or industrial development that's happening within the harbor itself. This merely addresses how we're looking at a current asset that's on our balance sheet, addressing why it got involved. We're coming to the conclusion ultimately of that purpose, and we have fulfilled that purpose in the way that we were initially asked by the municipality of Skagway, the governor at that time, Governor Cowper, and the legislature at that time. So it's coming to its natural end. There's terms that are defined within the leases of how that is undertaken, and we would look separately at the opportunities that are presented for Skagway and their future economic development.
You bring up a good point. It's on our balance sheet. Have we fully depreciated that by the end of 2023?
It's fully depreciated now.
Okay. Thank you.
So is there anything that you need from the board, Alan?
No, sir. This was an update really on Resolution 2105 to give you a assessment of our conclusions ultimately from the report and evaluation that was done, and to be able to answer any questions that you may have related to that.
And Skagway is where on the lease renewal again?
They, I take it by statements from Mayor Andrew Kamada at the Southeast Conference, where it was stated very explicitly that they would not be renewing any of those leases that the municipality of Skagway and the assembly itself is going to end the leases. So that's how we're viewing that March 16th is the end time.
Okay.
2023, March 16th, 2023.
And when do we have to give notice that we're turning it back over?
Following this board meeting, I will be writing a letter to the mayor telling us from the conclusions of our assessment and discussions with the board.
Okay. Any further comments? Hearing none, we'll go on to director's comments, item number 7.
Chairman, we have item 6F now, which is the ADA board schedule for 2022.
Okay.
We changed that with the addition of the voting for the vice chair.
We posted.
Mr. Chairman, I move we approve the proposed 2022 ADA board meeting schedule as presented.
Board Member Sandy, a second.
Any objection? Approved.
So on to director's comments. So starting off with the board resolution report, this is really for the board's review. This is an update of all the outstanding resolutions that have been approved by the board and the follow-up remaining balances, which is reported on a quarterly basis as requested by the board. So item 7B is our pre-development projects quarterly report. Now what this does is an update on our pre-development projects, which currently consists of the West Ascent Access Road and the Amber Access Road project, or Amber Access Project, excuse me. So this is an update ultimately on the resolutions that have been allocated to those particular projects and what has been spent or is remaining in balance at this point in time. And what I do need to identify those with the Amber Access Project for the 2021 field work. What is being represented here is ADA's share under the development agreement that we have with Amber Metals at $6.5 million. The budget allocated for the 2021 field season was $13 million, so our share is at 50% of $6.5 million. However, as you can see, there has been an encumbrance ultimately coming to $4.7 million total of that. So there's an unutilized balance at this point in time, and we'll be providing an update specifically on that when we review the 2022 field season budget.
When will we review the Ambler F-22 field season work?
To the chair, Board Member Fogle, I anticipate that that will be at our January 27th board meeting. So that will be following the submission of the annual work plan to the BLM for the 2022 season. So once that's defined, we'll know then what the full budget is, and we'll be able to present that to the board. Under item 7C, this is our loan dashboard report. What I do want to highlight to the board is that we have implemented two changes that have been requested by the board. That is to highlight a graph and listing that shows the participant banks or the underwriting banks and the portion that they have underwritten within the loan participation portfolio, and I'll point that out when we get to that page. We also have included the percentage of participation that it has undertaken. So that was not previously listed on there. And what you'll see is that it's a mix between 90% loan participation or a portion of the underwriting to be undertaken by ADA and 10% ultimately held by the bank. That's at the maximum levels. Ultimately, there's a mix of that, how it comes and is underwritten by ADA and staff. But ultimately, with the loan dash report, what I want to highlight is that we're showing a starting balance for the fiscal year at $463.8 million, and showing that really at an ending balance at the end of September of $452.9 million. However, what I'd like to really point out is within the loan participation program itself, we're talking about a starting balance of $445.3 million, and right now a balance after principal repayments of $440.4 million. That doesn't take into account effectively 11.9 million that we have outstanding and reviewing for new funding. So again, we're seeing increased activity with the loan participation fund, and the predominant amount of principal repayments that has come through really is in the power project loans. Those are the loans that we have acquired from our sister agency, the Alaska Energy Authority, under their Renewable Energy Fund program. So we have the breakdown ultimately on the industry sector. Again, in the graph is the presentation on this side. Directly after that is then the breakdown that's requested for the investors, really the underwriters in this case, of the participations. What you'll see is that there's a concentration that we have. The predominant amount is held by or underwritten really by Northrend Bank at 41.6% of our portfolio. The other principal party is the First National Bank of Alaska at 31.8%. However, we do have involvement now of 8 financial institutions within the state, and we have talked internally, and our loan participation staff, the Commercial Finance Division staff, with leadership from Tiffany Jansen, is also undertaking to directly talk with the local financial institutions, get them more engaged, hopefully in the loan participation program. So we do anticipate a broader involvement across that program and across the state. The other element really that I want to identify for the board and as to highlight the loan participations and the amounts, again, at the request of the board. So we have with the fundings, the approvals that have come in place, there's a mix that's between really 75% up to 90%. I do need to make a correction on information that we provided at the last board meeting. Chair, you had asked on RVN what our percentage was. We had said it was at 90%. It was incorrect. It's actually at 80% within that, 20% being retained by the funding bank. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the full question, please.
The revolving fund, our bank account, what is the delta that's not committed? How much do we have that's not committed, including what we have to set aside for Amber Road and all that kind of stuff?
By the most recent application discussion that we've had with the board on that, we're talking about anywhere between $7 to $8 million is really unallocated, what I would highlight. We have
underlying agreements in place with parties like Amber Metals under for the Ambassadors Project. We have undertakings that are commitments within funding commitments for our loan participation program. We know on average that we're anticipating this year of between 60 to 65 million within that program. So depending upon principal repayments, we have that funding obligation. We have the underlying obligation, as highlighted earlier in the board meeting with AEA, where Executive Director Thayer highlighted we have a $7.5 million commitment to fund our liquidity and funding gaps between federal funding, other sources of funding that come into AEA. So that is an obligation that really comes from a revolving fund. So aggregate.
You don't have to go into detail, just kind of wondering how. Maybe quarterly, you can give us a rendition and we can see what the changes is for what I call unencumbered money. Because the board of perspective as projects come in or whatnot, where it's coming from, if it's already been encumbered, if not, what percentage is taken.
We can undertake that in director's comments to update that information. It would give also the public a better perspective ultimately with the management of the revolving fund, ultimately why we're holding funds in place for these future obligations.
Yeah, you look at what they've got all this money, but in reality it's that most of it's encumbered. And we need to share that.
Right. In turn what I'm trying to highlight with the fact that we have commitments that aren't being represented in these reports.
Right.
For future fundings out of these programs, particularly the loan participation program. Thank you, Chairman. Ultimately, what I would like to direct the board's attention to is the last page, which is the delinquency page. And to give an explanation, we are highlighting here that there's a reflecting a delinquency, which in case is not a delinquency. And this is an element of the reporting process that we have in place. So under our facility agreements with the underlying underwriters, if there's a large amount of activities above a certain level, then they're required to provide remittances on a weekly basis. For their own cost effectiveness, for our cost effectiveness, that's how it's been defined. If it's below that level, it's on a month basis. KeyBank and their involvement ultimately in our program is below that threshold. Well, they provide monthly remittances. The loan in question actually, it did not pay in time, it certainly paid within the last report where we would have highlighted that this was not delinquent. So while we're reflecting a delinquency here and we're highlighting that it's effectively 23% of the portfolio that's within KeyBank, that remittance has actually been received and paid. It's the element of the timing under our service agreements. I raised that to inform the board that this is one of the elements that we're addressing and have been working with the Department of Law and how we change certain aspects, refine some terminology that we have within those service agreements. It's time to update them. So item 7D is our development project finance reporting. Again, we're providing updates under our projects that are under management between owned and loan programs for development project financing. And really available, staff is available to address any questions.
Alan, my only question is if it's possible for you and the staff to consider adding a section onto these reports. I know when projects come before the board, there's typically some... not a guarantee, but a plan for what the community benefit would be or what the benefit would be for Alaskans. And at that time, I sort of lose sight as time goes by and other projects come to us about what the original promise or ask was. And it would just be nice if we look at the report, if there's some measurement of whether or not we're meeting those milestones, metrics, what the benefit is. It's just something for you to consider.
I'll work with staff and we'll address how we can highlight that. It gets to a key point that we have really been identifying as we've been outreaching to different communities is that for ADA's mission on economic development, job growth, what we're really focused on is tangible benefits that are ultimately for the community. So you're looking at us really defining what, how we're delivering on tangible benefits. And I would like to see us identify that too. So unless there's any other questions, we'd like to just go on to the next. We have before the board the latest quarterly report on the Interior Energy Project. So this is what is required to be submitted to the legislature at the end of this month, but it's really being provided, and again, we talked about timing-wise being able to provide that for the board's review before submission.
Can we ask RG to come in and give us an overview of what's going on?
Chairman, I think it would be time, it would be good timing to have an update on that. If we could look at arranging that maybe the early part of next year. The other side of it, too, that I would ask the board is we have talked about, and we didn't address this because it was adopted on the schedule that we have for 2022, but one of the things that we have been discussing is not having all the meetings in Anchorage, going out to certain communities.
We've been talking about that.
So if there is any intention of having an IGU report, maybe we reach out and we have the meeting in the Fairbanks community.
Well, we'll see. We'll, right now, we're not going anywhere with COVID.
Okay.
What's that? Yeah, no, yeah. Well, we got it at Sheena Hospital in Oregon. Yeah. March.
Does the board have any questions on the most recent quarterly report? And that concludes my comments.
Thank you, gentlemen. So we bring us to item number 8, board comments. I'll start with, I see Anna is still online. So Anna, do you have any comments?
I just want to thank the staff for all of their hard work in modifying documentation and processes that provide clarity to Alaskans and to the board. I think that we've had some great project discussions, and I would like to hear more about the Fairbanks Energy Project as it is moving forward. With that, Mr. Chairman, I hope everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, and I hope to see you in person in December.
Thank you, Anna. Bill?
It was a good meeting. I want to thank staff for all their hard work that they put in every day. I know you guys are doing an outstanding job, and I just want to make mention of it.
There you go. Art?
I too, appreciate all the staff's work. They've been working a lot of overtime, more than usual, the past couple of weeks, especially to our Chief Financial Officer, job well done on the audit and financial statements, and I'm holding them accountable. I also look forward to the Budget and Audit Subcommittee reviewing some risk management in our loan portfolio, and I look forward to a couple of updates with Handler 1002 and the communications plan, hopefully in December. So thank you, Alan.
Well, I'd like to send my appreciation to Alan and the staff and the hard work and to Donna and the financials. Look forward to finally getting those off on the first of next month. Wish everybody a happy holiday season coming up, Thanksgiving. It's amazing how fast it is. I still think it's July. Maybe because there's no snow, real snow on the ground yet. Anyway, good meeting today. Notice 410, and I appreciate all the board's input comments. Look forward to